Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 7, 2014. South Sudan's vice president says he's confident the country will have a signed peace deal soon.
The issue is actually clear. Whatever we cannot debate in Addis Ababa, we can postpone this, you know, for the National Reconciliation and Healing Conference. So I believe we can actually agree.
And South Sudan's diaspora support President Obama's threatened sanction on South Sudanese leaders who interfere with the country's peace and stability.
If they are implemented effectively, I think they will work for the better of the majority of South Sudanese because it targets specific individuals in the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Activists from the South Sudanese diaspora gathered in New York over the weekend to talk about South Sudan's crisis and how to solve it. The conference took place 2 days after President Barack Obama announced a threat of sanction against any individual or entity found to be responsible for inciting violence or committing human rights abuses in South Sudan. South Sudan in Focus asked participants at the conference what impact they think the U.S. sanctions will have on South Sudan's future. We start with the organizer of the conference, Professor Amir Idris, who is the chair of the Department of African and African American Studies at Fordham University.
I think it's going to have an enormous impact on the governments and also in the oppositions. Both of them, I think, they will begin to rethink their positions in terms of taking the peace talk seriously. But also it has another impact, as a lot of people in South Sudan now, they reacted positively to the decision or the signing of the executive orders by President Obama. So in my view, it is a strong message from the United States. At the same time, it provides people with a sense of hope and also, I guess, opportunity to pressure their own political leaders to take the peace talk seriously and embark on the process of searching for a lasting peace for people of South Sudan.
Jock Madud, Jock of Loyola Marymount University in California and the SAD Institute think tank in Juba, says it's high time the international community took action to stop the violence in South Sudan. But he says sanctions are not a very effective way to do that and warns they might backfire on the United States.
It is about time that world leaders from Europe and the United States and within Africa spoke up against the absurdity of the war. On the other hand, people are skeptical about what sanctions could achieve because sanctions really don't have track record of producing the desired results often. And perhaps the sanctions will spur the government of Juba to give a more meaningful commitment to the peace talks. Or it could drive them towards rogue behavior and possibly towards alliances with Khartoum, with Bashir, a country that is already under U.S. sanction, and the sanctions have not really forced it to collapse as it was hoped. The lack of historical evidence that sanctions work might cause the leaders in Juba to simply turn away, and in that way the United States will have denied itself the ability to exercise the leverage and clout that it has over South Sudan for many years.
Jane Kani Edward is a professor at Fordham University in New York. She says President Obama was right to impose sanctions only on officials in South Sudan and not the ordinary citizens.
The good thing is because he didn't order a blind or a blank sanctions for the whole of South Sudan. He targeted individuals who were participants in the current conflict and those who abused human rights. And if they're implemented effectively, I think they will work for the better of the majority of South Sudanese because it targets specific individuals in the government and those who actually benefited from the resources that the country had.
Career diplomat Dr. David Basuni, who has served for more than a quarter of a century in several functions in the United Nations, also welcomes the sanction. But he says they are a last resort and do not always have a desired effect.
Sanctions are what we call blunt instruments. They are not selective enough to avoid people for whom they are not intended and hurt people who are, you know, innocent. So the last thing we want is a sanction. But I hope this will be a short, sort of an alert, so that at least it can move all the parties back into the talks with more seriousness, and they could come out of the talks with the sort of solutions and the formula that we need in order to move the country forward to peace, to stability, and back to development.
We'll have more from the conference later this week. Meanwhile, in Juba, Vice President James Wanyika insists the government is working towards an agreement with the opposition. Speaking at an event over the weekend to launch a new organization called National Platform for Peace and Reconciliation, Iga said he believes a peace deal will be reached soon. His comment also comes on the heels of President Obama's executive order threatening sanctions. Mungume Debs Rwakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Vice President Iga says he hopes the announcement of the platform will help speed up the third round of peace talks in Addis Ababa, which are postponed until the end of the month.
The issue is we got to be fast enough and to be realistic about time, and we should also obey the cessation of hostilities to create a conducive climate. And the issues are actually clear. Whatever we cannot debate in Addis Ababa, we can postpone this, you know, for the National Reconciliation and Healing Conference. So I believe we can actually agree.
Anglican Archbishop Daniel Dengbol is the chairman of the Committee for National Healing, Peace and Reconciliation, one of the three bodies organizing the platform. He says a peace deal may end the current fighting, but the conflict will not be over until both sides sit down and talk.
Political leaders can make deals and reach decisions, but this will not last unless people's voices are heard in those decisions. Our role is to provide space, include everyone, listen to the multitude voices that make up the nation of South Sudan. We must build the agenda for peace and reconciliation from the bottom up.
Bull says they'll go to churches and communities across the country and ask for people's advice about how to move forward. He says they will distribute surveys and ask for people's opinions starting this week. They plan to hold similar events in other state capitals. Bull says the government and various religious groups are supporting the effort.
The platform is not a fixed entity, but an open space where all who are concerned with peace and reconciliation can find a home and a voice. The platform is a space of critical thinking, reflection, proposing a solution, learning lessons and asking questions.
Bull says it will culminate in a National Reconciliation and Healing Conference to be held in Juba after a peace agreement is signed with the anti-government forces. The conference will include the top leadership from both sides, who will be invited to talk through the issues that led to the current crisis. Iga says, although the talks are delayed, he believes peace is right around the corner. But he says he does not believe it will hold unless both sides are willing to forgive each other. For VOA News, I am Mugume Debs Rwakarinj in Juba.
More than 1,000 students from South Sudan's Equatorial States who are studying in Uganda gathered this weekend in Kampala to talk about how they could contribute to peace process in their native country. As we hear from Bonifacio Taban, they attended a meeting in Kampala billed as supporting peace and unity for a better future of South Sudan. Bonifacio Taban has this report from Kampala.
The Equatorian Student Union organized a two-day event at the Equatorial Hotel in Kampala. Bush Buse is the deputy president of the unions.
For us as students in Uganda and anywhere in the world, even in South Sudan, we should find our strength in unity. In order for us to prosper, we should be united.
Eastern Equatorial Governor Luis Lobong Lajore said this student should understand the harbor war credits.
I believe you would agree that the interest of South Sudan is better than the interest of tribes. You should remember that we, the Equatorians, had suffered from the brutal civil war and destruction of property since 1955. We cannot again go for a meaningless war after gaining the independence we fought for.
Lojore urged the student to concentrate on their study rather than taking up arms. He said the more South Sudanese who gets a proper education, the less likely the country is to descend into future fightings. Western Equatoria State Minister of Education, Philip Fai, said the student should also reach out to their counterpart from other areas of the country to try to understand what are torn the country's apart.
We can be talking about the symptoms, but I think we need to address what are the critical root causes of this conflict. We know since peace was signed, since 2005, in addition to other challenges that South Sudan has.
Busse said they hope to organize a larger conference that would bring together students from all over South Sudan who are studying Uganda. He said it is important to start these conversations. Wani Jim is a public administration student at Kavadi University in Kampala, said he believed the conference was at least a first step toward peace.
This unity starts with the family. And the family here, I refer to the Equatorians. Once Equatorians are united, we shall be able to move out and preach the same gospel of unity to our fellow brothers and sisters in South Sudan. And at the end of it all, it will be South Sudan to benefit not only the Equatorians, only that the Equatorians are championing because we have the chance.
A student representing Makerere, Bugema and Kampala International University, among many others, attend the weekend events. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban in Kampala.
The government continued its court case today against four senior political detainees accused of trying to overthrow President Salva Kiir's government. The prosecution produced its last witness in a closed-door hearing. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Lead prosecutor James Mayen requested the five-judge panel to hold today's proceedings behind closed doors, arguing the final witness, a security operative, would present sensitive information involving national security. The judges granted the prosecution's request, saying the move would not infringe on the rights of the accused, former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum Okech, former Security Minister Oyaideng Ajak, former Deputy Defense Minister Majak Dagot Atem, and former head of mission to the U.S. Ezekiel Lolgatkwoth. Lead Defense Counsel Monyiluak Alor says his side is eager to finally present its case.
By hearing this witness, the course of the prosecution has been closed. So we will go back 3 o'clock to an open session in the court where the court will proceed with the other stages of the trial normally.
During the closed session, the prosecution played an audio recording of a conversation between some of the suspects on December 15th when the violence broke out in Juba. Alor says the testimony presented today was of little significance.
For us in the defense, we don't think that his testimony will affect our case so much. We think it's not as strong as it was portrayed or depicted.
Five previous prosecution witnesses called to testify did not appear in court. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Drinking fluids during hot weather is important for your health. It's best to drink clean water, milk or fruit juice to avoid dehydration. Drinking alcohol will not help you and can cause problems. Consuming a lot of beer, wine, or other alcoholic beverages can leave a person dehydrated, confused, and susceptible to injury. The signs of dehydration are dry lips and tongue, headache, or even dizziness. If fluids aren't replaced quickly, heat stroke or even heart problems can follow. So make sure you drink a lot of fluids, especially clean water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan remembers the hundreds of thousands who died 20 years ago today in the Rwanda genocide. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday, from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes a good friend?
What makes a good friend is a character first, the way he treats you. For me, that's what can make me make a good friend. But if you can't treat me well, you can't be a friend.
Now, the most major thing that make a good friend is behavior. Because a good friend should always care about anybody. Where there is a problem, is there to guide you, to counsel you. Where there is happiness, is there for you, always direct you to do what is good and what is wrong.
A good friend, in my opinion, is somebody who understands your situation, somebody who is always there when you are sure of happiness.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. About 400 Rwandans living in South Sudan gathered in the United Nations compound to commemorate today's 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says there are lessons to be learned from what happened in Rwanda for government and opposition leaders in South Sudan. Mungome Debs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
The genocide left at least 800,000 Tutsi dead and thousands of Hutus dead because they opposed the killing campaign started on this day 20 years ago. Organizer Pascal Ngoga says it is critical to remember the genocide to help prevent anything like it from ever happening again.
The word never again was the word in 1948 when the world woke up to put a structure, or at least an intention, to make sure that genocide never happens again after the 6 million Jews had lost their lives. Since then, the world occasionally forgets, and we meet in order to remind ourselves that we need to keep saying never again, lest we become complacent and it happens again.
The head of UNMISS, Hilda Johnson, says when fighting broke out in Juba in mid-December, she remembered the UN's failure to protect civilians in Rwanda and vowed not to repeat that mistake.
We saw protection of civilians emerge as one of the most important anchors of the mandate of peacekeeping missions. We saw reports come and instructions be provided and a policy be developed where the mandate of peacekeeping missions was not only to protect its own assets and staff, but it was actually to protect the civilians that were under threat.
Johnson says that has carried through in South Sudan's current situation, where more than 70,000 people are being sheltered at UN bases. Alice Buhinja, the head of the Rwandan community in South Sudan and a UN employee, says the genocide offers more many lessons to the country, especially when it comes to peace and reconciliation.
They can learn from Rwanda that themselves, if they are committed to the peace they want, they can make it. And even after conflicts, there's always hope.
Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin, who also spoke at the commemoration, says the country should learn from what happened 20 years ago in Rwanda.
My brothers and sisters from Rwanda, the lesson you teach, not only the people of South Sudan, but the whole world, both developed and underdeveloped, is that it is the Rwandan people that stopped genocide.
And Marielle says it is the South Sudanese people who must rise up and demand an end to the fighting that threatens the future of the country. For VOA News, I am Gumedes Rakarinj in Juba.
20 years after the 1994 genocide, a Rwandan government campaign encourages reconciliation by taking on the taboo subjects of ethnicity, a topic that is also sensitive in South Sudan. VOA's Gabe Joslo reports from Kigali that supporters of the program say it promotes national healing, while opponents say it is forcing some people to apologize for crimes they did not commit.
In high schools and universities, corporate offices and government ministries, Rwandans are engaging in a dialogue about ethnicity in a campaign called Dumuni Rwanda, or I Am Rwandan. One of the campaign's main proponents, Member of Parliament Edouard Bamporiki, says the idea is to start a conversation about the ethnic roles created by the genocide while reaffirming a national unity.
We are not sure 100% that we are different because we are Hutu and Tutsis, but we are sure 100% that we are all Rwandans.
20 years ago, 800,000 people were killed in a countrywide campaign of violence orchestrated by extremist Hutu militias targeting ethnic Tutsis and some moderate Hutus. Freddy Mutangua is the country director of the Aegis Trust, which runs the Kigali Genocide Memorial. He is also a survivor. He says the I Am Rwandan program has helped him to confront this dark history.
And the most important thing that I get from this program is learning about how to dialogue with the perpetrator, how to really feel much more comfortable to talk about your past.
Ethnicity has been a sensitive topic since the genocide. Now, in villages and public institutions, people are addressing the issue openly in moderated discussions. Mutangua says this gives people a chance to talk truthfully about what happened and to share different experiences.
A few things which have been taboos can be opened up so that the Rwandans can really decide together how they drive this country and also how they drive their lives in the future.
The ruling RPF party came up with the ideology for the program, which was developed in youth groups across the country. Participation is officially voluntary. But opponents say the program unfairly expects Hutus to apologize on behalf of the perpetrators of the genocide, even if they themselves were not involved. Frank Habineza is the president of the United Green Party, the country's only registered opposition party.
Those who have wronged, they should apologize to those whom they have wronged. I mean, let's say the criminals or the whatever, but not on behalf of my father, behalf of my mother and my grandfather. That one we are not, we don't support that.
Habineza also expressed concern that the effort is too one-sided, as public requests for pardons from Hutus are going unanswered from the victims. The initiative is one of many Rwanda has employed to try to unite communities divided by one of the worst atrocities of the 20th century. While the country has developed rapidly since the genocide, becoming a major political power in the region, reconciliation remains a long process. Speaking about the I Am Rwandan program ahead of a cabinet retreat in November, President Paul Kagame said, "We can't just solve easy problems and ignore their root causes." Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Kigali.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was in Kigali to mark the 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide. During a stop in the Central African Republic, he said the international community must do more and act more quickly. Intercommunal violence in Central African Republic has killed more than 2,000 people since December and displaced an additional 800,000. VOA's Anne Luke was with the Secretary General in Bangui on Saturday during his visit.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon told the CAR's acting parliament, the National Transition Council, that their country is in, quote, a state of anarchy.
La communauté internationale a fait défaut au Rwanda il y a 20 ans. Et nous risquons.
Mr. Ban said the international community failed the people of Rwanda 20 years ago and is at risk of not doing enough for the people of the CAR today. The UN leader noted that atrocious crimes are being committed in the CAR, including lynchings, decapitations, and sexual violence. He told the council that ethno-religious cleansing is a reality, and that Muslims and Christians have been placed in mortal danger simply because of who they are or what they believe. The Secretary General commended the efforts of French and African Union troops here, but said they are, quote, under-resourced and overwhelmed by what he called the sheer scale of the need. Mr. Ban said he continues to push for transforming the AU troops here into a UN peacekeeping force that would include 10,000 soldiers and about 2,000 police. During his whirlwind visit to Bangui, the Secretary General greeted displaced persons outside the camp at the airport. It's a staggering makeshift patchwork of shelters, home to about 60,000 people. Many have been there since December 5th, when heavy fighting and intercommunal killing broke out in the capital. A representative of the displaced persons at the camp told the Secretary General they are not there waiting for handouts. He says they want to go home, but many homes were looted or destroyed, and their neighborhoods are not safe. He said disarmament is the solution. The Secretary General also visited the central mosque in the PK5 neighborhood, where approximately 10,000 Muslim civilians remain trapped. Anti-Balaka militia outside are a daily threat, despite international troops on the perimeter. At the mosque, they held up signs saying they want to be evacuated. There were several signs calling for the division of the country, a growing concern here as the Muslim minority flees to relative safety in the northeast, a zone still under the control of the mostly Muslim Exelica rebels. An imam at the mosque read the Secretary General a dark inventory of what they have suffered since December. The murders, the threats, the destruction of their homes, businesses, and mosques. Ban Ki-moon spoke to the Muslims of Bangui. He says he is, quote, saddened by what he has seen. Your life, he says, is very difficult and very dangerous. Human rights, he said, is top priority, and he has deployed UN investigators to the CAR. Mr. Ban had the same message here as at every stop. You can count on me, he said. The international community will not fail you. The UN Security Council could vote on establishing a UN peacekeeping force for the CAR in a matter of days, and Mr. Ban said he is pushing for, quote, decisive action. However, analysts say a UN force would likely not be able to deploy until at least September. And look, VOA News, Bangui.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Ukraine's prime minister has accused Russia of backing separatist demonstrations, including the seizure of government buildings Sunday in three eastern Ukrainian cities. Arseniy Yatsenyuk told a cabinet meeting today that Russia is behind the unrest that rose up in those eastern cities. He said Russian troops remain stationed within 30 kilometers of Ukraine. India has begun voting in the world's largest election. The staggered voting for the national election will be conducted over 5 weeks. India's election is known as the world's largest exercise in democracy with its 814 million registered voters. And finally, South African runner Oscar Pistorius has taken the stand at his trial as his lawyers try to convince the court he is not guilty of murdering his girlfriend. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's all we have for you tonight. We now leave you with the song Urukundo, meaning love, by Kidum, a Kenyan-based Burundian musician. This one goes to our listeners from Great Lakes.
Mama,
We have been listening to Kidum with the song Urukundo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Wima wisonze shukuri kumukanda ukori joro numurango ukingiri nyungu sumuryango.